final presentation, I think we actually have two presenters. Is that right?
Yes.
Dual duty here. Lee Kaskoudis and Mina Subraman from the Alcohol Research Group here in California are going to be talking on effectiveness of MAZE, Making Alcoholics Anonymous Easier. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank all of you for coming. I know that you have choices in sessions, just like they say on the airlines. We know you have choices of airlines. You could have slept in even. So I hope that you find this last presentation of the session interesting. In it, you will hear about the intervention that we developed at our center called MAZE. There's a study logo at the bottom left, the idea being to help clients through the maze of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I will describe the intervention, and then Mina Subraman will present the results from our trial, which studied the effectiveness of MAZE. And I hope I hit the right, is it this one, the right one? The left one is the forward. Now, that is not intuitive. Is it? Did the left one before? Why care about AA facilitation? Well, AA is everywhere. It's ubiquitous. It's free. Study after study has shown higher abstinence rates among people who go to AA as compared to people who never darken the doorstep or who go but then drop out. Yet AA has very high dropout rates. Upwards of half the people who are newcomers drop out within the first year. Why do they drop out? Well, maybe they want to keep drinking. They don't like the God part of AA. How many of you have ever been to AA or have heard that there's this spirit, this God kind of component to AA, the idea of a higher power? You know, a lot of people, even if they're religious, they just don't like that idea. Certainly the atheists are not real warm to it. Other critiques are, well, it's a cult. These people talk a different language. They're not like me. I don't want anything to do with those people. It's like, ooh. So we wanted in MAZE to face up to that. The goal of MAZE, then, is to prepare clients to transition into the culture of AA, to equip them to deal with some of the experiences they are likely to encounter in AA so that they will not immediately reject AA as a potential source of help. So towards that end, we're not focusing on talking them into accepting the program of AA. We try to talk them into accepting, in a small way, the people in AA, who in turn will turn them onto the program of AA. We emphasize two aspects of AA that have been shown to be either a mechanism of action through which AA achieves abstinence, which is changing the social network, or a mechanism that gets people to stay engaged in AA, which is helping, having a chance to help. We found that that clients in treatment who have a chance to help other clients are more likely to be in AA a year later. So those are the two things that we focused on in deciding what to emphasize in MAZE. The structure of MAZE, 3 points to take home in your mind. One is that it's very short, so it's very practical, only 6 sessions. It's group format. Most treatment in the United States is not one-on-one. It's group format. And it's manualized, meaning that for each of the sessions that a counselor leads, it tells you what to cover, how long to cover it, and what topics to include as a discussion point versus just straight-out lecture. The manual has 5 session outlines because you go to the intro session as your first and your last session. And then you go to the 4 core sessions, which could be attended in any order. So you go to the intro session, then you go to the 4 core sessions, then you go back as a graduate to the intro session. 3 reasons for the idea of going back to the intro session as a graduate. First, you get to experience the benefit of helping. Second, the clients hear a credible peer talking about their genuine ideas about AA before MAZE and after MAZE and how they felt about the MAZE intervention. That comes straight from social learning theory. Third reason is that the counselor is not alone for what inevitably is going to be an I hate AA bashing session. In that intro session, we do something very basic. Show them how to read the meeting directory. We've been shocked at how people who've been to treatment, you know, 5, 10 times, in and out of prison, they have no idea what a C or a W or a BB means. next to the codes for these meetings. So we just try to make it easier for them to read the manual, to read the directory. And their homework is to use that directory, pick a meeting, and then go to it, a meeting that they've never gone to. We also briefly explain to them what the rules of the road are so they know what to expect, so they don't need to feel, ooh, I might say the wrong thing at a meeting. Now I'll get into the core sessions. Spirituality session. Goal is to take the mystique out of AA's notion of spirituality and to make it accessible to non-religious folk. We try to explain, although they don't always believe it, that it's a spiritual, not a religious program. In terms of what we mean by spiritual, it can mean whatever you want. Your vision of God can be whatever you want it to be. In fact, if you're an atheist and don't think there is a God, that's okay too. It could be the group, could be your higher power. The main thing that you have to do regarding spirituality in AA is one thing only, and that is to be clear that you are not God, but that you are responsible for your behavior. We explain that spirituality in AA is not a philosophical belief system. The spiritual life is not a theory. You have to live it. We explain you're going to hear things like act your way into good thinking. What does that mean? What that means is pretend that you do believe in God. Pretend that you actually aren't in charge of the universe and see if that changes your thinking. And then get outside yourself, do some kind of service, either within AA, put away the chairs, clean up the coffee, or outside of AA, walk your neighbor's dog. Be nice. The principle's not, the homework on that session is to talk to someone in a meeting who you don't know, who has more sobriety than you. And what they do at the next session, the first part of the session always is, how did it feel to do your homework? Not did you do it, but how did it feel? We want them to get used to this idea of talking about their feelings, which is emphasized greatly in AA. So now this principles not personality session is focusing on the idea that you're going to meet people you don't like. But don't you meet people you don't like at work, at home, at line in the supermarket? The only requirement for AA is a desire to stop drinking. The only rigid rule is that it's abstinence-based. AA does not like it if people are trashing the program during a meeting. It's something you can do, but it's not going to be well received. We say it does feel like a click at your first, second, third meeting. You don't know anybody. You're looking at them. You feel weird being there. And we explained that one of the things they're going to get out of maze is to try to get over that, to understand that the people in AA, even though you might not realize it, they really do want to be welcoming. You know, but they're just like you. You know, how welcoming would you be to a stranger? You know, and things like that. So the homework then for that session is to go up to someone who you don't know in a meeting and ask them for their phone number. And then telephone them and talk to them, not just leave messages when you know they're going to be at work on their machine. And we've been amazed at the feedback we get from that session. People say, you know, I know I'm supposed to do that, but I would have never done it had I not known that I was going to be expected to talk about how it felt to do that. And since I'd never done it, I wouldn't know how it felt. The sponsorship session is everyone's favorite session because they get to play like actors. They go to the front of the room. One of them pretends like they're asking someone to be their sponsor. Another person pretends like they're the one being asked. We explain that you're not imposing when you ask someone to be your sponsor. You can make it just temporary. Then they have these four vignettes where they come up and take turns practicing. And the first vignette, asking someone you went to coffee with. So they pretend that they're at a cup of coffee, and they're like all the actors, you know, with their coffee. And finally they get around to saying, well, do you think you'd be willing to be my sponsor? Another is you're on the phone. So they, you know, they're on their cell phone. They're on their whatever. And the last vignette is the toughest one, and it's the most important one, because in that vignette, they ask someone to be their sponsor, and the person says, you know what, no, I'm really too busy. I'd like to, but I just can't. And that happens a lot. One of my best friends, it took her 13 tries to get a sponsor, and then that sponsor didn't work out, and she had to start all over again. That's going to happen. We want to prepare them for that. Not surprisingly, homework for that session is asking someone to be your temporary sponsor. The most difficult session is the living sober session, because we want them to get the idea that involvement in AA and with people in AA can help them have a happy life, and that they can have fun with these people. and that they can have fun in sobriety, that their life has not ended. They can still have sex. They can still dance. They can still go out with people. So homework for that session is to do something with people from AA who have more sobriety than you, and try that on for size, see how that feels. After these four course sessions, you go back to the intro and sort of testify as to your experience. So now Mina is going to talk about the results from our trial.
All right. Thank you, Lee. So now that Lee has described what Maze is and its basic components, I'm going to discuss our trial and what we found in our study of Maze effectiveness. So in the trial, we recruited patients or participants in an on-off design, first into the off condition and then into the on. We had an extended off period, which coincided with part of the on period to control for any historical influences or maybe social things going on with celebrities. Maybe, you know, Britney Spears went to rehab and it'll get people to go. So in order to control for those things, we had a period where the two coincided. We had two treatment sites that participated, both in California. One was in Tarzana, which our fellow speaker, Jose, is the director there, and that's in the LA area. Our other site was up in Northern California near Berkeley in Newbridge. So the treatment sites offer three kinds of programs, long-term residential, short-term residential, and outpatient. And the participants who were in the off condition just went to usual care sessions. So the patient just followed the regular treatment program curricula. And then those who were in the on condition attended the six May sessions instead of the six usual care sessions over a six-week period. So here's a breakdown of the kinds of people we had in our study. In terms of demographics, participants were about a third women, about half white, and in terms of DSM diagnoses, the highest was drug dependent only at 43%. So these are the bivariate results, just comparing the two conditions by percent clean, sober, and percent clean and sober at the 6 and 12 month follow-up interviews. And here, at 6 months, those in the on condition did not so much have significantly higher abstinence rates, but at the 12-month follow-up, those in the on condition were significantly more likely to be clean, sober, or clean and sober, meaning totally abstinent, at the 12-month follow-up interview. And then we looked at some multivariate analyses, just controlling for length of treatment stay, which is measured in days, marital status, which is married or living with somebody versus not, and treatment type, meaning short-term residential outpatient, and those were against the long-term residential. And here what we found was that at the 12-month follow-up interview, those in the on condition had higher odds of being clean or sober, not clean and sober so much, but clean and sober, clean or sober at the 12-month follow-up interview compared to those in the off condition. So after we compared the two conditions, we thought that maybe Maze dose would be a better, could better capture what the participants were doing, because even though they were assigned to go to all six May sessions, that was not necessarily the case. So instead of just comparing the two conditions, we looked at how many May sessions they attended. And so when we looked at the function of dose, we did find that all three of our abstinence outcomes, clean and sober, clean and sober, those who got a higher maize dose did have significantly higher odds of all three of these abstinence outcomes at the 12-month follow-up interview. So here we have a graph of the percent of those who were clean and sober at the 12-month interview plotted against the number of sessions or the dose that they received. And so, again, they could get anywhere from 0 to 6 sessions, and those who are in the off condition, we put in the 0 dose. And I don't know if you can see from back there, but those who received no maze sessions, who did not go to any maze, had an abstinence rate about 72%, whereas those who went to all 6 maze sessions actually had an abstinence rate of 91%. So that's a difference of almost 20%, which is pretty big and exciting for maze. So after we did our main analyses looking at the whole sample, we decided to look at different subgroups of people. So we looked at sex, we looked at race, religion, problem severity, and DSM diagnoses. And what we found was that maze really seemed to be more effective for those who aren't married, for those with more experience in AA or in treatment, so who had gone to treatment or have gone to more meetings, those who are worse off psychiatrically on the ASI, drug dependent. One very interesting result was that the atheists, agnostics, and unsure seemed to do better with maze, and social networks also was a factor. So what we're currently doing is looking at possible mechanisms of action using mediation analyses to see why this is happening and what could the mechanisms be for these groups to get more out of maze. So that's it. We'd like to acknowledge the maze co-author, Eddie, and our NIAAA funding, the rest of our maze team over at ARG, and that's, oh, and of course our site for the new bridge. I don't know why it says New Beginnings, but thank you very much.
I'd like to open the session up to questions, where you could actually direct questions to specific panel members, or you may have more general questions.
Yeah. Well, we think that maybe maze did something to get them to stay engaged in AA longer, and that's why we're picking it up at 12 months. Whereas at 6 months, they're maybe still terrified of drinking. Maybe they're not going to AA, but they're still being kind of good on their best behavior. At 12 months, we didn't see the slippage in the on condition. Yes.
It would seem that might link up well in the criminal justice system with, you know, exit strategies and case planning.
Yes.
In the prison and jail.
Yes, and if you have access to those populations, that would be great. We would love to. The manual's available now. It's free. No training's required. We would love it if you would contact us. Is our email anywhere?
No. It's not on there.
Well, you can go to our website at the Alcohol Research Group or see me after, and I'd just love nothing more than to either write a grant to do that or just have you do it now.
Houses now have been sold for rental, and it's just chaos, particularly on the weekends. point is there's tremendous social fallout around these college campuses. My question is, the thing that occurs to me from personal experience and otherwise is that the difference between high school and college is all the free time that all of a sudden we've got. I think many of us who went on to college, boy, we were busy during high school. Even because we were programmed, all of a sudden we've got college and we're not doing programs. So have you or anyone kind of looked at that issue?
Most of our research has been focused exactly on those topics. This is sort of our first toe in the water around the treatment issue, but we've really been primarily focused on the kinds of things you're talking about. I think there are a number of other things that are different between high school and college. Beyond what you mentioned, primarily, these are vulnerable students who are expressly the target of an alcohol industry that's trying to sell them their products. A lot of college campuses, though certainly not all, are very wet environments. Alcohol is easily accessed, and we've actually done some work looking at the social impacts on neighbors around colleges, and schools that have heavy levels of drinking are much more likely to have a range of negative problems like your mother experiences. There's absolutely no question about it. I think the treatment issue is extremely important. It's sort of the most extreme version of something sort of bigger going on underneath the surface that manifests itself in a lot of different ways in the communities.
So just a quick follow-up then. It really seems like we're kidding ourselves to think that individual treatment is. I mean, it's probably part of the package, but I mean, where we're off this view, you really can't even get off campus at that one liquor store I'm thinking of that's over by the football stadium. It's literally, I mean, technically it's private property, but it's really part of the campus. So until we're willing to take those things on, I just think we're kidding ourselves. I'm probably wasting a lot of resources.
And I wholeheartedly agree with you. And usually when I come to conferences, we were talking about the other side and get treatment questions, but I'm thrilled to get the prevention questions at a treatment talk.
Can I just comment on that for a second? I don't know if you're familiar with the alcohol EDU program, the online course. One of the features this year we set up my school is that students can select from a menu of activities that they'd be interested in participating on campus. And I was actually really shocked that this year, out of 1,000 first year students, about 60-70% said that they would like to see alcohol-free activities, and they actually chose which ones they wanted. And I sent that along to our student activities division, and so they can target outreach to students from that. And that was a really nice feature for us to see what students were really asking for and what they wanted on campus, whether or not, now it's kind of hard to tell whether or not they are engaging in those opportunities that we're offering. But there was definitely an interest there, which I thought was kind of a positive move in the right direction.
Yes.
I'm going to add a comment. I used to work at the University of Massachusetts in Amherst, about 20,000 students, and I think an ecological model is the only way you can make a change, because the biggest, I think, resistance has been faculty and staff and their own behavior and their own attitudes, their own experiences in college in terms of it's sort of a normative behavior that we get through it. And so when that's changed and we have Sally Young and everyone changing their attitude towards alcohol, what's considered normal, and then also looking at the amount of alcohol liquor stores that are around, the types of activities that we have on campus, the timing of those activities, residence hall staff working with faculty, the timing of classes, the faculty actually have 8 o'clock classes to take attendance on Fridays, all those different things that could make a culture change. That's what you're looking for, is really culture change.
Do you have any questions for presenters who haven't been asked any questions? Yes.
So more on the coaching, is there a concept in Rotary or Chambers or whatever for them to ask for engage in mentoring or coaching relationships? I'm just thinking as far as local communities, how we might access. I don't have a lot of engineers in our department, so it wouldn't be, but trying to, without funding. I mean, if there are community models out there for professionals to get that kind of relationship.
I don't know if there are really, but I think it's something that we could explore and try. I think having coaches, I think, is an easy way to go. But the person doesn't have to have all that much expertise.
Chris? Yeah.
That was sort of my question.
Oh, okay.
She
well, that's.
I actually work with substance use treatment programs in Massachusetts, and my question was more, what's the specific focus of the coaching? But it sounded like you just answered it, which is using pretty much the model of evaluation to really create more of a team approach and efficacy, and looking at this.
It's focused on using process improvements to have change, and particularly looking at what needs to change from the customer's point of view. In the change sheets, a lot of them actually have customers sit on the change sheet too, and so they do walkthroughs, so they simulate the experience of a customer, a client, and see what they are saying about their treatment, and they get ideas then as to what could be changed to make it more acceptable for the client, so that they're more likely to make changes in their treatment.
So it's like actually research.
It's process improvement.
Yeah, I just had a question, whether you think it would be a good idea to encourage treatment programs to try to team up with a research institution such as ours, because we're very anxious to take the machinery that we know so well, which is how to do follow-up interviews and trace people a year later. If you want to have those outcomes to know how your clients are doing, we know how to help you do that. We're ready to give it to you. All you have to do is call us, and we love such a system in place. We always do that with all of our studies, and that's free. I mean, we don't want anything in return. I don't know. Do you think that would be a good idea?
I think it's a great idea, and particularly in like master's programs, like at our university, we have a master's in public health program where our students in epidemiology and biostatistics track, they all have to do an internship where they analyze data.
That's a great idea.
Ready population,
yeah,
and
that's
they would
right.
love to analyze whatever
great.
Data is available.
That's a great idea. Sure.
Go ahead.
No,
I
did.
I have some handouts on the back page there, and I also have business cards. So.
Yes.
On the older adults is our experience in our work in a local community and at a county level, and a lot of our older adults are more hesitant to surface their own history of use of alcohol, even those in recovery. And I was wondering about, is there any recommend or how we might help value that, bring them to the surface as being a resource to help other older adults that are in the midst of recovery?
Yeah, I think we only see the tip of the iceberg. I think the vast majority is, in fact, you know, probably still at home, not really being identified or, you know, assessed by anyone. So I think home outreach models are one way, and also, at least in our local community, peer models have been very effective. Trained volunteers who are peers, not professionals, have been more effective in terms of breaking through that, some of that initial barrier of, oh, you know, I do drink myself to sleep, but I'm not an alcoholic, you know, type of thing. And I love how you're involving all of us that by asking each one of us a question. Thanks for that.
Well, it's 10 o'clock, so we really need to finish up. It's been a really enlightening and stimulating presentation. Thank you all for coming. Thanks to our presenters.